Apple is reporting that at least 600 schools have handed out an iPad to every single student, not just in Tony suburbs, but in less affluent schools in New York, Chicago. Here in the Boston area, Burlington High School went all iPad in the fall. They say it cost them $500,000 and they made cuts elsewhere. No one's left out. They say they've set up their own version of the Apple Store's Genius Bar, staffed in part by students, for the technically challenged. But how does this work? What happens to textbooks? Are kids just playing Angry Birds? We have questions, and Principal Larkin joins us in the studio with answers. So, Principal Larkin, first, cost. We're looking at a graphic. Someone crunched the numbers and says it's much more because you have to factor in training and Wi-Fi network, iPads, and electronic textbooks.
Yeah, I agree with that infographic, by the way, but if you're just looking for these tablets to be textbooks, then I think you're wasting your money, but they're more than just textbooks. What we've done is we've cut out three of our computer labs this year that were traditionally used for research and typing, and we don't need those because we can do that in every classroom at this point. One was our foreign language lab. We were looking for a new foreign language lab at a cost of about $100,000, and with the iPads, we have a foreign language lab in every classroom.
But what about the textbooks?
We don't need to buy textbooks anymore.
You're not going to buy textbooks?
No, we're not.
None?
Textbooks, I believe, are relics. When information was scarce, that's what we got, a textbook. But now when information is plentiful, we can use devices like the iPad. It's not just about the iPad. It's about having a web-enabled device. And the iPad is what we're using right now. Who knows what we'll be using 2 or 3 years from now.
Okay, but textbooks are carefully designed. They're coursework. So who frames the coursework?
I think the learner should frame the coursework, especially at the high school level, the teachers and in some cases the students. If the overarching topic is made clear, why can't the students go off and search for relevant information? I think that's the way learners need to conduct themselves now instead of somebody giving you one static document and saying this is what the correct history of such and such is. Now they can go out and find it themselves. And I think that's a skill that people need to learn in this day and age, is what information is relevant and what is not.
Wait a second. And when we say you're not ordering textbooks, we mean, of course, paper textbooks, but are you ordering e-textbooks?
We're not ordering e-textbooks either. I don't think, at least not pay for ones from the textbook companies, because that's not a cost-saving proposition for high schools either. The initial model was $14.99 a piece out of the Apple Store, and you can't pass those along to the next student. So if a class of freshmen has an Algebra 1 ebook from the Apple iStore for $14.99 a piece, we can't pass that down as a school to the next group of students coming in.
And let's bring in one of your teachers. Todd Witten is chair of the history department. And Todd, your thoughts about this, no textbooks, no ebooks. First of all, have you been doing it?
Yes, we have been doing it. And I have to say, I like it. It's not as though we just threw the curriculum out when we got the iPad. We're still working off of the same stuff that we've been working with. And rather than say to the students, okay, you're going to read this page in class, and then we're just going to go over what you read, I can say to my students, this group over here, look for the Ottoman Empire. This group over here, look for the Safavid Empire. And you guys look for the Mughal Empire. And I want you to focus on leadership. Find me information about the leaders. Throw it up on the LCD screen. We'll talk about what leadership looks like in the Muslim dynasties.
Okay, but how do you trust the source of that? One of the kids finds an episode of The Simpsons,
absolutely,
which discussed the Ottoman Empire.
Well, first of all, The Simpsons is a perfectly valid learning resource at times. So that's part of the lesson. We begin the year by looking at the internet and saying that very question, how do you know to trust this source? And the students have to build that kind of understanding of truth and their own truth. I mean, in my class at this point in the year, if a kid throws something up on the LCD or is sharing something that doesn't sound credible, they jump all over him. They say, where'd you get that from? You got that from here? That's not a good, you know. So they start policing themselves in a way that helps them learn how to use the internet effectively.
But is that efficient use of time? Principal Larkin, who's sitting here, by the way, on his iPad.
Textbooks are not curriculum. Textbooks are guides that help us cover some of the curriculum. I don't think any of us have ever found a textbook that covers every aspect of our curriculum that we have written. So actually here we have much more flexibility. We can go in and change things on the fly when we're creating it ourselves. And I think the only thing we want to be hesitant about is to think differently about what the opportunities are. Like, who are the experts that wrote the textbooks? They didn't talk to the teachers in our classrooms about what they wanted in these books before they came out.
Well, in fact, we understand most textbooks are shaped by what Texas wants. You're nodding yes, because Texas is the largest purchaser of textbooks, and we know that, you know, there's a lot of controversy there over teaching, for instance, creationism in the schools and things like that.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily always have the point of view of all sides. And I think, again, in the past, we were looking at one document, and Todd would have done the same thing with a traditional textbook to ask his kids, how do we know this is relevant information, or how do we know this is accurate information? And now we can pull in all kinds of different resources rather than just one static thing that was created in Texas.
Well, Todd?
There was just an article in the Boston Globe this past week talking about a new discovery in China that indicates there's a whole other branch of the human species that they've found. If I were relying on my textbook that was published in 2005, I couldn't have that conversation. Whereas I had students who had been, you know, following the Globe online and brought in the article and wanted to talk about it and were able to deconstruct what we had already learned to say, what's the implication of this?
Yeah. What about math? When, you know, the textbooks had the problems and the key with the answers, you know, very straightforward. You're not going to Google around to find different ways to do your algebra.
Correct. That's one reason why I think we can put it together ourselves. Why would we ever buy a new textbook, like you said, when how to solve this problem in algebra hasn't changed for the last 10 years? The one thing we can put in some of these interactive resources, or we can draw upon things like Khan Academy.
Khan Academy is the terrific, we should say, it's the online academy that was just profiled in 60 Minutes, started by this young man, wonderful young man, who started off by doing math problems for his sister online, and it grew where he just was helping everybody do math.
Yeah, and that's free open resource stuff. There's free open education resources out there. The problem right now, what we have to learn how to do as educators and what we want to pass along to our students, because this is new to us, is the process of curation. Like, how do we find relevant things, and as we're having discussions, and how do we know these are accurate representations of what we want to pass along to students? And our students can do that work with us, especially at the high school level. And then you start to get into some of the higher order critical thinking that we want to get to anyway. So I think it's a really exciting time to be an educator. And I think Todd's class is one example of where they're doing this work.
Patrick Larkin, principal of Burlington High School here in Massachusetts, and Todd Witten, head of the history department there. We still have questions, but we tweeted students to ask how they're using their iPads, and one way was to send us back video responses. Here's a portion.
For me, the iPad is really useful just so you could always have access to information.
I'm here all the time after school for musical or swimming or something or other, and just the fact that I have the internet right there and that I can easily access any homework, any studying to do, it makes it so much easier.
As a musician, I use the iPad, a new app called Notarize, where I can take notes right on my music. And I can circle certain bars that I need to skip or tell myself to look ahead and jump a section.
I'm sure you have questions, too. Send them to hereandnow.org. Before the break, the Khan Academy came up. It's K-H-A-N. As a resource for kids, this is a free online site that's found really creative ways to teach math. But Todd, if you send your kids to that site, doesn't it take teaching out of your hands?
No, not so much. The way I look at it is it's supplemental to what the kids are getting from me. The Khan Academy type video is incredibly useful for me. I've got them for 45 minutes, and at the end of 45 minutes, I can tell, you know, Susie still doesn't quite get it. So I can say, listen, as part of tonight's homework, here's what I want you to do. I want you to find, you know, I direct them to a website and I say, you know, watch this video or, you know, do this activity or follow this time stream or thread or what have you, and then come back tomorrow and let's talk about it. So it really gives me the ability to direct them to resources that help them learn even better.
You had some skepticism at first, Todd. So what were your concerns and what's been the reality?
Well, I think, I mean, for me, it's pretty much any teacher would look at this possible game-playing device in the classroom that allows them to go on Facebook and Twitter and play, you know, do all sorts of stuff. And, you know, teenagers, you give them an inch, they're going to take a mile.
Do they? I know kids. I bet they do.
Of course. There are some who do. And so part of my skepticism was I'm going to have 18 kids in my room who are thoroughly distracted. And what I discovered is that if I modify my classroom management style, they're not distracted. I mean, the great thing about the iPad is you just turn it over and it's done. It's basically a shiny piece of metal on your desk.
Principal Larkin, you know there's a whole school of thought that there are some parents desperately trying to keep kids away from technology so they have more tactile time, they develop their brains. You know, there's research that shows as much as you can, keep them away from the technology till they're older. Do you worry about that?
I think, honestly, we're connecting, we're engaging students in ways that kind of fit the world they live in, and I think that's unusual for schools.
And this is high school.
Yeah, we do worry about balance. We have those conversations. What we want to do is tell the parents what the kids have the iPads for, reinforce that, and it's okay for the parents to take the iPad away at home. They should still monitor it. We've gone from a world where we used to tell parents a few years ago to put your computer in a common area so you can keep tabs on what your kids are doing online. And here goes the school and hands them these little mobile devices they can take into their rooms, and they have cameras, and they can have FaceTime chats with their friends or anyone around the world. So it's really important to keep those conversations with parents going and to remind them that we own the device, they own the kid. So whatever they decide they want to do in their home in regards to technology, that's fine with us, and we'll support them on that. I've heard from some students that say, I'm really learning to monitor my, you know, game playing or whatever, because initially that was a distraction. To others that say, I used to get C's and D's, and now I'm so much more organized by having this one device with all of my notes from every class instead of having binders and notebooks stuffed in a backpack. So we're hearing both sides, and we're hearing some kids don't like the iPads, and that's fine. I think.
What do you do about that?
There's no problem with them.
But they can't do anything. There's no textbook for them to revert
to. Teachers can, if they prefer to have a printout of something, it's not happening too much, but teachers can print out a copy of something for them if that's what they want to do. I think the good thing we have to realize is we have more choices than we've ever had before. So if people like to take physical notes or read from a physical book, in a lot of cases, we're still able to accommodate that. I think that will diminish as we see some of our younger kids move through.
But I think it's also important to remember that it's not that we just suddenly threw all the textbooks into it, you know, into the dumpster and said we're done with them. We still have textbooks in the building. We still do use them. You know, there are some kids who aren't taking to it and some that are. But I think that over time, as we go through, this is it. We're going to see new technologies we can't even imagine coming into the classroom.
Well, in the meantime, when it comes to education, Todd, just give me some examples of things kids have used the iPad for, maybe that you didn't foresee.
Sure, we do. Well, how long do you have? We use an app in my class called Show Me all the time, and it's basically a whiteboard-like application that allows students to take pictures, import them, and then basically draw on them, mess with them, you know, reconfigure them. So for my class, students are, when we're dealing with maps and geography, students are taking snapshots from Google Earth or from Google Maps or even just from physical maps that I have in the room, importing them, and then they can show the transitions of cultures, the growths, the movements of human beings all around the globe, and then they can upload it to a cloud, they can share it with each other, and then they comment on their blogs. They engage themselves in conversations that go well beyond the classroom.
You know, all the kids are in Todd's class are writing blogs. Kids are using Evernote for note-taking, where they have all their notes in one place. We're a Google App school, so that's really been a useful thing for us. Google Docs is a collaborative writing environment where you and I could simultaneously be working on the same document online, and you'd see my typing and I'd see yours, and you can do that with 100 people if you'd like to.
The other difference between a textbook and working on an iPad online is advertising. So when you go into the Google documents, you're delivering a classroom of kids to Google advertisers.
Google doesn't have ads on Google Apps for Education, which we have. There's no advertising on that.
Oh.
Yeah, if you sidestep it and you use like an app like GeeWiz, then you do get the ads.
Some of the other, but we have Google Apps for Education suite, so what we offer our kids, now they have access to all kinds of stuff that does have advertising on it, but there's whole states that have gone Google for Education in this country, and right now it's a great option.
Well, you know, one of the things I'm thinking, you know, we air across the country, and I can hear people in school districts where they can't even get chairs for their kids, you know, thinking, oh, my kids are going to be so far behind. How do you integrate your kids from these classrooms as they go to college and, you know, go on? I mean, it just feels like we're going to be making an even bigger divide.
There's no doubt about that, and I think that's a moral issue that people above me have to start dealing with. I think public education, in a lot of cases, I think we really have to question the relevance of what we're doing and what we're preparing them for. And I think this emphasis on standardized testing is not leading our kids to any marketable skills. It's still a big game of Trivial Pursuit in my mind in a lot of cases, filling in a bubble sheet.
In high school. A bubble sheet. That's where you take the number two pencil.
Yeah, we're doing that this week, actually. No offense to bubble sheets, but we spend way too much time on those things in Massachusetts and in our country.
Your kid's Todd are going to be thinking, what's this, a pencil? What? You fill in the hole?
Which end do I hold?
I look forward to that day when we have to tell him what that is.
Yeah. We've been talking to Patrick Larkin, principal of Burlington High School in Burlington, Massachusetts, where every single student has an iPad, and one of the teachers there is Todd Witten, head of the history department. Patrick, Todd, thanks so much.
Thank you, Robin. You.